Did you feel like you were equal with them as far as being in the pilot training phase there?
Yes, my instructor, Captain Costin, United States Marine Corps, was such a prince among men. He just was amazing. And we had a lot of flights in the Navy. You're on wing. When you start with them, you really don't see anybody else for 13 flights. And so it was just Captain Costin and me every day. And he, like I say, he was a prince among men. And so I didn't feel any pushback then. They saved it for me later.
Okay. So you were the only female with the squadron there. Stacy, did you experience that? I know you went through pilot training in the 80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So how was your experience and the hardest thing that you encountered in training?
Yeah, so I would say the hardest thing that I encountered in pilot training was pilot training. So my story is a little bit different because I had an ROTC scholarship for engineering, and it was an ROTC instructor, luckily, that said, "Hey, have you ever thought about becoming a pilot?" And I said, "No." And he says, "Well, why don't you apply for, you know, that program?" And so I competed, and I was able to be selected for a pilot scholarship at the same time. But going through pilot training, I always felt behind the power curve because it had never been a lifelong dream. And so I perceived that the guys in my pilot training class, who were magnificent, you know, they had always wanted to fly since they were this high, and they had gone to ground school, and some had already had their privates and commercials, and I just kind of felt like I was always pedaling upstream. But I let my instructors know how much I wanted to be there and how much I wanted to be a pilot. And so, you know, we worked together on this. I was determined. I tell people I met the Tuskegee Airmen 2 months before I went to pilot training. And I thought, you know, they worked too hard for someone who looks like me to be able to be in pilot training, that I was going to succeed.
Yes, absolutely. That squadron's amazing. Yes. Very good. Now, I'd like to talk to I know, Autumn, you were a boom operator before becoming a flight engineer. So to my boom operators here, I'm just going to talk to you as a boom operator right now, and then we can transition to your flight engineer experience. But what did you find hardest about that training? And we'll start with Autumn and then go to Callie.
For the boom operator training, the hardest part... Well, I wasn't the only female in the class, so okay. I didn't have that against me. It was just kind of a new territory for me. So I had worked on planes for 6 years prior to that. So coming from working on them to actually flying on them and being a part of the crew, I think probably the hardest part was the changeover and kind of the mindset that I had to transfer from.
Okay.
Where sort of the maintenance world is kind of like a dog-eat-dog sort of world. The flight crew world's a little bit more family-oriented. I like to think that we're a lot closer-knit group, which was helpful with the transition. Mm-hmm. But for the training itself, I mean, if you can play a video game, you can drive a stick, right?
Right, right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of challenging aspects, because a boom operator does a lot in the jet as far as weight and balance, and they also do cargo loading in the KC-10, so there's a lot of math skills involved as well. They do a lot more than just move the sticks around in the back, which a lot of people don't realize that we do.
Right, right. So you're flying that boom.
Yes.
Good. Very good, yeah. And Callie, for you, any?
I remember I was like 1 week into my sims and stuff, and we did a CRM sim with two of the pilots and stuff. And they asked, I knew about the APU, and that was basically all I knew about the jet at this point. And they like were asking me all these questions, and I was like, there's no way I'm gonna like ever know any half of this. But I had really good instructors throughout the whole time, so by the end of that, I didn't find too many challenges throughout it. Like, I had a lot of good support and stuff, and I was the only girl in my class, but all the guys were super supportive and with me the whole time, so it was pretty easy.
So for the most of you, I guess you found that your peers going through training were in your same situation, and you felt support and camaraderie amongst the group. And I think we've all experienced that, and that's a great thing. So now, once you graduated from your course, and who did you look up to guide you? I mean, I know when I went through, I was the only female. There weren't any females who I could go and ask questions, you know, how did you do with this situation or the other situation? So who was a big factor and mentor in your career? And I know you've been in the Air Force 3 years, and now that Autumn has moved from boom operator to flight engineer, I don't know if she's kind of one of your mentors at this moment. You
she's
know,
traded
you're
over.
Part of the same crew. So, you know, have you found someone that you can share and ask? And
yeah, when I first, before I came in, I went to look around the squadron, and one of our senior master sergeants introduced me to a girl from the 79th, and she just told me about different factors that I would have being a girl and stuff. Just, I think he wanted her to warn me, but it came off the other way, so she got me really excited about it, and I've looked up to her throughout all time. She's back on the 135 now, but I still call her when I have questions about things or want to know how to handle stuff, and she's gave me a lot of good tips on how to show that I'm a good boom operator right off the bat, because there are people that'll see that there's a girl on board and just assume that they're gonna have to do all the work just because you're a girl, so.
Right, still. And for you, Autumn, a mentor that you looked up to?
I look up to a lot of different people.
Okay.
For me, right now in the engineer position, it's a little bit different because on the reserve side of the house, I'm the only female engineer in the squadron between the both of us. So looking for another female to help is a little hard. I have these lovely ladies here
yes.
that do help me out a lot.
We paid her for that.
Okay.
but I do have a very good rapport with a lot of people that have positively supported me throughout my journey to become an engineer, which has been nice. And then on the active duty side, I do have another counterpart here in the audience who is a female as well, who has kind of helped guide me and mentor me through things. So it's been really nice to have her kind of by my side along the way.
Okay, great. And Jill, any one person or more?
I would say throughout my career, it's been many people, a lot of great role models that I've looked up to that maybe were my mentors but didn't even know it, kind mm-hmm. of, and maybe I didn't even know it at the time, but looking back, I know a lot of people have supported me, men and women, both helped me learn a lot about myself and also how to do the job well. So yeah, it's been a great experience in both the squadrons that I've been in. Yeah.
Okay.
For mentors, for me, it's actually kind of humorous. I was, I think I put in there earlier that I was an intern at UPS, and that kind of is, I call that kind of my fork in the road, and when I went one way as opposed to the other, I knew I wanted to join the Air Force Reserve. So I started to pick people's brains that were working at UPS, and Taylor had gotten to work with both Dave Smith and Gloria Hatcher. They've both been pivotal in my chasing my UPS dream. So when I knew I wanted to join the Air Force Reserves, Gloria, I actually had a conversation with her that afternoon, and she called up to Grissom. I got a phone call that afternoon that they wanted me to come interview. So she kind of set my path on that. And then I had the privilege of actually flying with Dave Smith at Grissom. He was my squadron commander the first time I deployed. So he probably has a lot of stories that we don't need to talk about. but he helped me through the way as I worked my way through KC-135s and then KC-10s and always kept in touch with me and kept on me to come back to UPS. And when I hit 1,001 hours of PIC time, which is what the minimum was, mm-hmm. he walked my interview in, or my resume in, excuse me, and they called me for an interview the next day. So they've been great people, and it's just awesome how people find you and you find them when you're meant to. So.
Right, right. But I think when people find you, it's because you've put it out there, hey, this is what I'm looking for. You know,
yeah.
if you keep it to yourself, sometimes they don't know. So
yeah.
you never know who you're talking to. So,
yeah.
So Stacy, for you, you've had a long career. I'm sure you've had many mentors, and we'd
Absolutely.
Like to hear about those.
Yeah, lots of leaders and mentors that have meant a lot to me. My very first, though, who I remember to this day, and a lot of us really, I think of him in the same way, was then Lieutenant Colonel Stephen Roser, and he retired as a Brigadier General Stephen Roser. But just, and this was when I was in the 14th Military Airlift Squadron, when it was Military Airlift Squadrons back in the 80s. But just a phenomenal leader, a phenomenal mentor, a servant leader, and you looked up to him and you knew he cared for his airmen as much as he cared for the mission. And so I always just wanted to be like him.
Very good, very good. And Heather?
So in terms of mentorship and role models, one of the challenges for me was I had plenty of those role models there in the fighter squadron from a tactical perspective. So I was fortunate to be surrounded by amazing fighter pilots who are great instructors, and I just really wanted to emulate their skill set, their knowledge, how they flew the jet. Dan Raisin-Kane, Mark Sasseville, they were just phenomenal. But in terms of professional mentorship, someone who could help me figure out how to navigate the fighter squadron or what my professional career and what that pathing would be, there was really no one available to me. And from that perspective, again, it was really challenging because no one in the fighter squadron would touch me with a 10-foot pole. Because not necessarily just simply because they didn't want to talk to me. It was really more they were concerned that any kind of mentorship and the special relationship that is bestowed through that mentorship would then be misinterpreted. And so that was something that I was kind of untouchable regarding. I have to say, though, I was really fortunate shortly after I got to the fighter squadron, about 3-4 years into it, I became connected with the, don't laugh, it's real, Chick Fighter Pilot Association. So for the small numbers of us that are fighter pilots and weapon system officers, we have a professional group where and social group where we mentor each other. We talk about best practices, how to handle situations, how to handle life events. A pregnancy for a woman in a cockpit, in a fighter cockpit, can utterly derail your career in a way that when a man has a child, it doesn't affect him at all. And so how do you manage some of those more challenging and disruptive elements to your career progression and your upgrade progression that men don't have to worry about? And then frankly, also just simply validating perceptions and what you see and feel and intuit throughout how you professionally interact and socially interact with your squadron mates. It's very different, I think, for women than it is for men. So to have a group of women who not only care about being the best fighter pilots out there, but also understand all the other elements that are different, having to manage the family and the domestic duties and still be ready to deploy and still be tactically proficient, still do all the briefing and the debriefing and the mission planning materials, that was really essential to my time in the fighter squadron.